Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I was listening to an Audible book whilst I was weeding and started feeling a little bit dizzy. So I thought, okay, I'll come in and make a cup of tea and go and have a lie down because I had time to do all that. So I made the cup of tea, got to my bedside and then collapsed. So I wasn't feeling particularly hot or stressed or anything like that. It was completely normal, just feeling a little bit dizzy. I'd obviously fallen asleep, but I woke up when he got home, and I was trying to speak to him, but my speech was all kerfuffled, didn't make sense at all. And he immediately called 999, and the lady on the other line got him to ask me various things about my face and to say things and just to see what was going on. This wonderful girl arrived, paramedic, and again did some tests and things on me and said, okay, yes, definitely you're having a stroke, we need to get you to hospital. So then the two chaps in the ambulance arrived, excellent treatment from them, and very, very funny. I remember laughing a lot for what they were saying. I don't see through one eye, and I'm just basically existing with one eye vision, as it were. But the great news is that I've been about 6-7 months ago approved by the DVLA to drive again. So that's meant that I could go out shopping and drive carefully, obviously, and have a bit more independence to go out and see friends. So I've been quite successful with that.
Hello, Mark Goodyear here. Welcome to Stroke Stories, the podcast that seeks out and hears from stroke survivors. Today we hear from Marcia Scott. Originally from Hampshire, now living in Somerset, Marcia was 57 when she suffered her stroke.
Before I had my stroke, I worked as a freelance interior designer, working on residential properties, country houses, etc., in and around Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire and London. Very healthy before, I was considered healthy, no problem with blood pressure or cholesterol or anything like that. We have a dog, so lots of walking, Pilates twice a week, and I was really enjoying my life. My stroke happened just after lockdown, so it was all fairly awkward. But that morning, I had been finishing off mucking up some plans in my office for a project that I was working on in London. So I had a good morning's work, and I wanted to go out into the garden to finish off some digging and some weeding that I'd started the day before, previously. So I went out, and my husband was going to go out for a bike ride. So I said, okay, fine, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to get back to some work. So I was listening to an Audible book whilst I was weeding and started feeling a little bit dizzy. So I thought, okay, I'll come in and make a cup of tea and go and have a lie down because I had time to do all that. So I made the cup of tea, got to my bedside and then collapsed. So I wasn't feeling particularly hot or stressed or anything like that. It was completely normal, just feeling a little bit dizzy. Collapsed on the floor. All my left side had gone. I couldn't feel anything there. But I managed to drag myself using my right side onto my bed. And there I lay until my husband came back about 20, 25 minutes later. And I'd obviously fallen asleep, but I woke up when he got home. And I was trying to speak to him, but my speech was all kerfuffled, didn't make sense at all. And he immediately called 999. And the lady on the other line got him to ask me various things about my face and to say things and just to see what was going on. So in which time she had already called an ambulance and a paramedic. And this wonderful girl arrived, paramedic, and again did some tests and things on me and said, okay, yes, definitely you've had a stroke, you're having a stroke, we need to get you to hospital. So then the two chaps in the ambulance arrived, excellent treatment from them, and very, very funny. I remember laughing a lot for what they were saying. So we got into the ambulance, off to the hospital in Bath, and I remember coming out of the ambulance, they put me into a wheelchair and I was waiting in the chair ready to be processed at the A&E when I'd blacked out. Next thing I remember was a day or two later waking up in another hospital, and out of my head they'd put a drain because I had bled in the part of my brain where there was brain fluid. I think it's the ventricular area. And so I had they'd shaved the side of my head, removed a 50p piece, sort of bit of skull, and put this drain in. And there I was, waking up, not knowing where I was, in the middle of lockdown. And the staff at Bristol Hospital were excellent. I was in a very good unit, so I was quite lucky to be treated there. And I was there for 3 weeks in Bristol and then moved to Bath, back to Bath, for another 3 weeks. During this time, they were giving me physiotherapy for walking. I couldn't walk, but they were trying to get me strong again. And then I ended up for 2 weeks at a hospital near Taunton, South Petherton, which is a stroke recovery rehab hospital. Again, really, really good treatment and good physio and speech help there. And it was there that I noticed that I couldn't quite see or focus on the television properly. And it wasn't until after I came out of hospital, after the seven weeks I was in hospitals in total, that I realized that I had double vision. And so I was starting to, I could walk by that time. I'd had a very good girl coming out to me at home to help me walk. She was part of the early discharge unit. They also came out to help me wash and dress. I had to have a bath chair or chair over the bath so that I could be showered. And then I had to walk using a Zimmer frame. But eventually the girl, the physio, managed to get me walking. And also my Pilates teacher came out to visit me as well to help me get stronger. I was then referred to an eye hospital where they then confirmed that, yes, double vision had affected me. I know that most people get problems with mobility after a stroke, whereas I had this double vision, so my vision was completely changed. I could look through both eyes, just they weren't working together. And so I had to wear an eye patch for a year, 18 months, something like that, I think. And then back in 2022, I had a strabismus surgery on my eyes where they would try to correct this double vision, but all they managed to do was to just realign the eyes. I've now been left with permanent double vision, which is called intractable diplopia. So I've now got an ocular foil, which is basically one of my lenses on my glasses is frosted up so that I don't see through one eye. And I'm just basically existing with one eye vision, as it were. But the great news is that I've been about 6-7 months ago approved by the DVLA to drive again. So that's meant that I could go out shopping and drive carefully, obviously, and have a bit more independence to go out and see friends. So I've been quite successful with that. Apart from that, the only thing that the stroke has left me with is a little bit of spasticity in my left hand. I'm a little bit sort of clumsy with the left hand, and I'm not able to carry a plate of food. It's not advised by my husband to the table. So I have to use both hands for that kind of thing. And restless legs is a very strange thing that's happened as well. I've got very restless legs. So I use a magnesium butter for that, locally made, which is excellent.
Marcia was diagnosed with a condition called CADASIL.
What had happened in my family 2 years previously, my sister had been diagnosed with it's a rare genetic stroke disorder that affects the small blood vessels in the brain, and it's called CADASIL. She'd been misdiagnosed as having MS or Parkinson's, but they did further tests. So we knew that she'd had small strokes and was in a steady decline towards sort of dementia and vascular dementia, etc. And my brother had been tested, but she'd been advised by her consultant to get her members of her family tested. So my brother was tested. He has CADASIL. And then I hadn't been tested by the time I had my stroke. So I was tested when I was in hospital and they found that I did have CADASIL. But that's not necessarily a cause of stroke. It's a condition. So you basically just have to look after yourself because of that. So there's still no idea from my consultants as to how the stroke had happened. Returning home was lovely because I got to see my dog again and also my husband, because I wasn't allowed any visitors in hospital throughout the 7 weeks because of lockdown. And the only time I got to see him was when I was wheeled out to a balcony off of my room, the last hospital I was in, and we could wave, and he'd brought the dog out to come and see me. And it was all incredibly emotional and tearful for me. But it was great to see him. And then coming home was lovely, being back in my own bed and familiar surroundings. We live in a bungalow as well, which was incredibly helpful through getting in and out of rooms and around the house. So we didn't have to negotiate any stairs at all. So that helped enormously. But it was just great being home, being with my husband and seeing friends visiting, being with my dog, and that was it. But I was basically housebound for a couple of months before I could really go out or was allowed out. My husband, Mike, has been brilliant. He clearly found me at the very beginning. So if it wasn't for him, it would have been a lot bleaker, I think. But he is semi-retired and keeps himself fit and well with cycling and running and walking. And he had to help me when I came home, helping me to do things like go to the toilet. And he did a lot of the cooking, or in fact, all the cooking, and driving, shopping, taking me to appointments, etc. So he's been completely crucial in my recovery and rehabilitation.
Coming up, Marcia talks about trying to return to work.
Since my stroke, I've tried to get back to work. I've had various inquiries and opportunities, quite exciting, high-profile opportunities, but I've tried to think about how I would cope with that. I'm not allowed to climb up any scaffolding anymore. I wouldn't really want to anyway. But the thing that's really affected me is fatigue and tiredness.
And the stroke affecting her vision.
Having to negotiate the world through one eye is quite exhausting too. That affects me and my tiredness a lot. So lots of early nights and getting up early in the morning is one of my favourite things. I use my right eye to see, and what I can't do is quickly turn around and look at something.
Let's hear how Marcia was able to drive again.
As months went by as a passenger in the car whilst my husband was driving, I felt more and more able that, oh, I could drive here, I could drive there, just a few sort of miles down the road or whatever. But I still wasn't allowed. So we applied to the DVLA, who then asked me to have some appointments at the optician to check my field of vision, because that's the most crucial thing. And wearing an eye patch on my left eye didn't give me any of that. So I had to make sure I got some glasses that could help me with that. And that's what I've got now. So the field of vision test is crucial for that kind of thing. So I had that. That was the results were sent off to DVLA. And then eventually in June of last year, June 2022, I was given the all clear to drive again. So since then, I've had a few little mishaps getting into the drive. We've got a quite narrow driveway. So I've scraped my car, quite a lot. So it's been a bit costly getting back driving. But all the same, it's fine. But I'm not working anymore. So I don't need to drive for work. Since my stroke, I've tried to get back to work. I've had various inquiries and opportunities, quite exciting, high-profile opportunities. But I've tried to think about how I would cope with that. I'm not allowed to climb up any scaffolding anymore. I wouldn't really want to anyway. But the thing that's really affected me is fatigue and tiredness. So I'd spend quite a lot of time on trains getting to site and to projects, and that's really affected me and how I think that I can deal with a project. So I've had to be quite realistic, and I've come to the conclusion now that I would not work anymore. And I tried working part-time, and again, that too was too, it was just too exhausting. So I'm quite happy now with my decision.
Marcia still suffers from fatigue.
At the beginning, when I arrived home, got returned home, I would get up, get dressed, and that would tire me out. Having a shower, getting dressed would tire me out, and I'd be sitting at the table eating my breakfast. And that was exhausting. So it's straight after breakfast, I have to go back to bed to lie down, because it was all in my head. It was extraordinary, all in my head, and just feeling that I couldn't talk, couldn't move, just wanted to lie down. And it's dissipated slightly, I would say, in the last few months. But I still have to have an afternoon nap. I still have to lie down after it's like a 4 or 5 mile walk, really, with the dog. So I have to be realistic. Even if I don't feel tired, sometimes I just have to make myself lie down and rest and close my eyes. I also think that having to negotiate the world through one eye is quite exhausting too. That affects me and my tiredness a lot. So lots of early nights and getting up early in the morning is one of my favourite things. I use my right eye to see, and what I can't do is quickly turn around and look at something. I do my eye exercises in the morning to try to focus to single vision, but I can sometimes do it if I'm looking not just my hand at close quarters, but to look out at landscapes is impossible with one eye, or both eyes basically, but it's just normal. It's normal looking through one eye, but using two eyes, it's as if you're looking through a kaleidoscope.
And Marcia believes you should always follow medical advice.
Advice I'd give to a stroke survivor would be to listen to what people are telling you to do, particularly physiotherapists, because I found that invaluable, and they make a lot of sense, and they're correct when they say that if you don't do this, something will happen or something will go wrong. You won't make it, you won't manage it. So I would definitely say to listen to professionals if they say eat healthily, keep moving. Particularly, that's very important if it's possible. I know that some stroke survivors have problems with mobility, but to keep walking, to keep moving and thinking and exercising your brain is really important. Advice that I would give to loved ones is to listen to the person who's had the stroke and to help them negotiate a different, possibly a different way of life and to give them time to think about how they want to change their life or how they want to now negotiate life.
Marcia suffered her stroke at the height of the pandemic and spent 7 weeks in hospital, but she remained positive and dedicated to her recovery and is back driving and walking her dog. Thanks for listening to Stroke Stories. Please do share the episode you hear to help us spread the word. And if you are or you know of a stroke survivor and there's a story you can share, we'd love to hear from you. Our DMs are always open on Twitter and Instagram. The Stroke Stories podcast was produced by Aidan Judd. I'm Mark Goodyear. Thank you for listening.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.